Do you know about all the musical genres that were created by black musicians? Like jazz, rock and roll, and folk music, to name a few. This Black Music Month, State Farm is celebrating the cultural impact and influence of music created and inspired by black innovators. Next time you're enjoying a song, trace it back to its origins and see for yourself. Check out the Black Music Forever station on Pandora, brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Hey everybody, welcome to the In and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Yo, yo, yo.
With a very interesting title today. We're going to be talking about this a little bit. James, do you want to share what your current hashtag is?
It's BBLZenny.
BBLZenny, yeah. Tying back to last week's conversation about Kendrick Lamar and Drake. Okay. But, you know, with an anime twist this time, right?
Yes, and because just as I like to think of myself as the Kendrick Lamar of anime reviews,
okay.
I'm saying that I'm coming up with that as I say it, and it sounds ridiculous, but I'm going with it because that means that Zenitsu is my Drake, and Zenitsu I will expose him for the monster that he is in as catchy and bumping away as possible.
Yeah, because this week, over the weekend, was the weekend, right? That Demon Slayer 40-minute premiere?
Yeah.
Aired?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah? Yeah, another one of those.
Yeah. So was that as good or better, worse than the last premiere for the last season? Do you even...
Oh, God. Look, I'm just going to be real. I don't think Demon Slayer's had a good premiere since season one.
Yeah.
I think, like, the season two premiere, which was technically the first, like, 20 minutes or whatever of Mugen Train. I don't know if we even count that. But if we count the premiere of Swordsmith Village arc, the premiere of Entertainment District arc, and now this premiere... Demon Slayer has really doubled down on its commitment to spending the first hour or so of every single season sucking. And not okay, that's I'm being a little hyperbolic. It sucks in like big enough chunks to detract from any of the cool stuff happening around it. And that's because the show always says, hey, you know what a great way to start this new storyline would be? If all the guys were back at the little butterfly girl place. Hanging out in bed and doing exposition at each other for an hour. And also jokes.
Yeah. People saw that in theaters, right?
I would have been so mad. I would have been so angry if I paid money to watch that episode. And I guess the fight scene from the end of Swordsman.
Right, that's the impression that I got that the last theater screening was also that. It was like... the end of the previous arc plus a bunch of exposition that counted as the first episode of the new arc. Yeah, it's a table setting episode, but like the closest thing I can compare this to is, and I feel like this was one of the first 40-minute premieres that we got was for Fate Zero. And there was, you know, it was hard for a lot of people to get into it because there's a very long scene of two dudes talking to each other in the room. In fairness, same studio, now that I think about it, right? Was that also UFO Table?
They love their 40-minute long premieres.
And just like panning around a room while like a guy walked around another guy and talked to him about how like the magic system worked or whatever. I love Fate Zero. Like that's kind of my favorite Fate out of all of them. It's just it's not kicking things off with a bang, right?
No. Well, and the problem with Demon Slayer's table setting is if we're going to go with that analogy, it would be like if someone made this incredibly ostentatious, overlong, overwrought, overdramatic ordeal out of setting the table, but then all they were using were a bunch of paper plates and napkins that they stole from McDonald's.
Can we at least get some Red Lobster biscuits in there or something?
Or some endless steak fries from Red Robin. Take some of that too. Point being,
Red Sticks from Olive Garden. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the record for saying that, in my opinion, Demon Slayer works best as junk food, you know, which is not to say that it's junk, but it is very, you know, high salt, high sugar. It's tasty and it's delicious, but it's not really nutritious. And if you think too hard about everything that goes into it, you'll probably wonder if you shouldn't be eating something a lot healthier. But at the same time, you can't deny that sometimes a juicy, greasy burger with ketchup and mustard is just delicious, and that's great. But if I went to a McDonald's and I was greeted by like a maitre d', we'll be a 45-minute wait for your table, sir. And then we sit there for 45 minutes, and the maitre d' leads us to the table, and it says, "Would you like to see a selection of Coca-Cola products today? Can I interest you in the Sprite?"
Yeah.
I would wonder why we're going through all the rigmarole. I just want my cheeseburger, man.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about these premieres, where it's like, I get it. There's demon stuff that's going to happen. Presumably, the bad guy that looks like Michael Jackson is going to do something at some point, because they keep talking about it, even though he hasn't been on screen in like 4 years, I feel like.
Oh, dang. He was the main reason I was watching.
He was on screen a bit last season, I think, or one of the seasons, but he's like a little kid, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
That's really all he's done. And I think he was maybe in that scene from last season where they spent like 20 minutes in that big rotating house just yammering on about being bad guys. He might have been there. I can't remember anymore. I will say we did get a great fight scene in this premiere. There's a really cool, we got the serpent Hashira.
I like his vibe.
Yeah, he does snakes.
Yeah.
That's pretty sick.
I like that.
And I'm not gonna lie, I have become more fond of the Entertainment District arc as time has gone on. I think that's one of those arcs that also just works a lot better if you just get to watch it all in one.
Maybe the shenanigans are a little more fun.
You don't have to like wait 5 weeks for a single fight to conclude. You can just like get on with it.
Yeah.
But Tengen's back. He has the ninja harem. I like that guy.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. He's got like an eye patch and stuff now, right?
Yeah. It's like an eye patch with a diamond. It's super bald.
That's pretty cool. I hope we see like the updated look at AX and stuff, because I always liked his character design, and he was fun.
I just love his like very gung-ho band of wives who are just we're all about this. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Good for you guys.
Yeah. I haven't watched the premiere yet. I fell off during the Swordsmith arc, not too long, maybe after like the Hot Springs episode. I fell off real early. So it was like,
you didn't miss much. That season was genuinely not good, I think.
Well, so what I've heard about this upcoming season, unfortunately, James, is that somehow they are making an entire season out of like 5 chapters or something like that. Like it's very, that's very small in the manga, the Hashira training arc. Like I think that there was discussion prior to this that it would be like a movie or something, because it's so unsubstantial. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, fine. At its worst, Demon Slayer is just frustrating and occasionally kind of boring.
Yeah.
But it's never hurt me in the way that Well, okay, I was actually about to draw a very apt comparison. Only occasionally does it hurt me in the way that, like, Fruit of Evolution hurt me. And that's whenever Zenitsu's around. And I have heard that he's going to be around more this season, which is great for me.
And Netsuko, I'm sure she's happy too.
Hey, okay, okay. So can I just, can I spoil the one moment of the episode that made me laugh out loud?
Okay.
So this is a genuinely great joke. And it's a sign that maybe Demon Slayer will have something for me in the future after that. And it's that, of course, Zenitsu comes back from wherever the hell he's been. And he's doing his Zenitsu thing, which is to say screaming very loudly about Nezuko and being deeply obnoxious. And Nezuko's there, and she doesn't have her little mouth thing anymore because she can be outside and, you know.
Nice.
She can talk, right? She can say words now again. Yeah. And Zenitsu freaks out and flips out and it's like, oh, Nezuko, you must have learned to talk for me. It must be because you love me so much, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm laughing just thinking about it. It's so good. Nezuko looks him dead in the eye and just says, welcome home, Inosuke. And you can see.
Zenitsu just like dies inside. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. I need more of it. I need more.
Yeah. Before we move on to Yatagarasu and the latest episode of Kaiju number 8, we've got a couple bit of news, and I was going to share an anecdote about retro gaming recently. I was talking to James about this off camera, but we recently became the owners of a new to us PlayStation 3 because my husband, his favorite game from the PlayStation era is Xenogears, which is out of print, and we have a copy of it on disc somewhere. Like, somewhere. I've seen it. I know that it's somewhere in the house, but we could not find it. We couldn't find the OG PlayStation that we had, and we didn't find out till later that our previous PlayStation was, like, out at a family member's house. So, and most folks know if they have, like, older consoles, they have shut down the PlayStation store for the older models in the same way that, like, they shut down the Nintendo store on the 3DS and stuff recently. But apparently, if you log on to your account on, like, your PC, you can add funds to your PlayStation wallet, and then you can log into your PlayStation 3 and have access to those funds. And in that way, we were able to get a copy of Xenogears, Suikoden, and Suikoden 2. So I've been watching my husband play through Xenogears again, and I kind of miss that aesthetic of games.
2D sprites on janky 3D backgrounds? Hell yeah.
Yeah. It was good. Like, the world map and everything, and the music in that game is amazing. Mm-hmm. So we have also ordered the soundtrack on vinyl. And I'm waiting for that to show up through Discogs. I don't know if any of the folks here have ever used that, but just in, like, an amazing soundtrack. Animation still looks pretty good. The lip flaps are nowhere near matching.
It was the Wild West back in the
day. Yeah.
We were lucky we didn't get, like, Mega Man X5 Zero, I think. I can't remember which one it was, but the infamously, the dub that was, like, so bad it turned the game into a comedy, right? Like, not even cringy, just out and out a comedy. So we're lucky that they even got actors that knew how to talk right
in
those days. It was really a different time.
There's all kinds of weird stuff. Like, the game, I guess, has a whole, like, mythology to it. That's weird. I haven't played it through, so I'm, like, learning the story as he plays it. And I don't know, maybe all the humans on the planet are crash-landed aliens or something. Lots of weird stuff. Weird game. I wish it was ported. I don't know why.
I don't know why. Especially after playing Final Fantasy VII remake Xenogears, Square, for the love of God. That game would slap so hard. And yes, Xenoblade is good. I love the Xenoblade games. Xenoblade is great. Xenosaga, I've never gotten to play yet. But Xenogears, for anyone that hasn't played it, or is only passingly familiar with the Xeno series, it basically is like Final Fantasy, but with mechs. It's like, let me rephrase that. It's like PlayStation 1 era Final Fantasy So like future sci-fi mixed with kind of vague fantasy aesthetics, but also giant mechs. And it's incredible. And like Lindsay said, the music is all-time classic.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So I just kind of wanted to share a little bit of that with you guys. If you know your fantasy no gears, drop your favorite mech in the comments. You can do combos with them. You can make your mech bicycle kick on people's faces. It's a lot of fun. All right, so jumping right into the news, Hideaki Anno says there may be more Evangelion.
Yeah,
that's what he told the Asahi Shimbun newspaper very recently. Although I think the biggest, most important caveat is if there is more, he probably won't have much to do with it. Like as far as directing it, that guy is done.
Let him make other things, people.
Yeah, he's working on the Yamato film.
So, I know, you know, that's gonna be really cool.
Yeah, that's gonna be really cool.
Excited to see that.
James, would you want more Evangelion if Hideaki Anno wasn't directing it? And
yeah, I mean, so I am more than happy to indulge in some fun Ava side stuff. You know, there's a whole world of Evangelion light novels and manga spinoffs, and even the manga itself is not really, it's based in the story that Anno came up with, but it definitely goes in its own direction by the end. And, the Super Robot Wars games, there's a whole lot of non-Anno Ava stuff out there. And as long as it doesn't try to be like core Ava.
Yeah.
Or I guess as long as it doesn't have any pretense of supplanting or even I would say rising to what the core Ava movies and the core Ava franchise is, I would be fine with it.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of I know that back when 3.0 plus 1.0 came out, or maybe when I was doing the Blu-ray, he had mentioned that there's like that whole chunk of time, that whole time skip in between 3 and 4 that was in the previews, but then just never got animated at all. No, sorry.
Yeah.
In between 2 and 3.
Oh, okay.
Two and three, where at the end of Ava 2.0, there's like the next time on Ava, and there's like a whole preview reel, and like almost none of that made it into the actual final film because they jump forward all those years.
Yeah.
And he said that it would be cool to make like an Evangelion 2.5, like a little in between, and that could be cool. I could be down for stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm kind of. So this might be because I generally have maybe sequel fatigue, because we have so many like large franchises now that have like constant, no, don't make me whiter. There we go. That are like constantly coming out with like an, you know, here's the mid cool for something Star Wars related or Marvel related or whatever. So I am not enthused by the concept. Of course, whenever this would come around could be so far flung in the future that my feelings will be different by then. But just like, if this were to come out before the end of the year, just hypothetically, if there was something new Ava coming out by the end of the year, I would be kind of pissed off. I don't know why I feel that way. It's just sort of like, leave it alone. Like just, it ended perfectly in my opinion.
Yes.
Several times, but it ended perfectly. Yes.
Three all-time great endings. That's a
three all-time great different endings. But just like the last, I liked the last ending as much as the other two, and I just kind of don't need the characters fiddled with anymore. It would probably have to be like completely other characters. Yeah. I don't want to see Shinji anywhere.
No, well,
leave the boy alone.
Right? I agree. If we're not gonna do like the very specific kind of in between like side character, you know, in between 2.0, 3.0 stuff. Because in that one, like Shinji is, you know, out of the picture. And so that could be a really cool opportunity to explore some of the characters in the rebuilds that didn't get a lot to do, like Ritsuko or what's his name? Futsuki.
Or the one guy designed by Miyoko Anno, that pink haired girl who just, you know, showed up to
Yeah, they could get some, like, there could be some cool stuff there, but I agree that it can't be Shinji again. Never again.
Yeah.
you know, if we did like 5,000 years in the future and it was like, you know, the turn A Gundam of Evangelion or something, okay. Yeah. That could be something. Or if it was an alternate universe, like in the, like in some of the light novels where it's like a more traditional, like mechs versus aliens sort of thing. And it just gets to be its own different kind of sci-fi story.
Yeah.
Or a comedy or anything that isn't Shinji further trying to wrestle with his shattered psyche, because that, yeah, like you said, that is done. That is 100% done. He is off, yeah, in the sunset with his beautiful wife, Mari. And yeah, that's what we get. And that's good.
Yeah. I don't want to ever see him in a robot. Never again. Let him, no, just, yeah, let him just,
he needs to get a boring ass job in the countryside.
Yeah.
And live a boring ass life.
Raise some cows, boring, or, yeah, something. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Get into, real, like, get into like a model ship building, you know?
Yeah.
Open up an Etsy or whatever the Japanese equivalent of Etsy is.
Yeah. 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 I guess we'll see like what we hear of it. I mean, some people are interpreting this article as Anno not as saying, but not saying like, no, actually it's just done. But I don't know. Yeah. We'd have to see. The next bit of news I wanted to talk about is, and I think this film was announced a couple years back. This is the Lord of the Rings anime called The Lord of the Rings, The War on Rohirrim. Rohirrim?
Rohirrim?
Rohirrim. Okay, the H is like it's enunciated then. Okay, the, yeah, War of Rohirrim, which makes sense because it has to do with Rohan. Like I read some things before this because I'm not like entrenched in Lord of the Rings lore. I saw Peter Jackson's original trilogy. That's all I got. All right. Like, yeah. So anyway, this has been in the works for a little while, and Variety revealed on Monday that not the entire film, but a good portion of the film, or at least the first footage of the film, is going to be shown at Annecy in France. Jason DeMarco, who people probably know from Toonami, but he's also ahead of like the Japanese animation projects over at Warner Brothers, shared the new logo, and I'll show that real quick. It's you know, like there's nothing wrong with the logo. It's just I feel like it's very kind of what you would expect this logo to look like.
Yep, Lord of the Rings font. There we go.
Yeah. The movie itself is supposed to be coming out in December. So you guys can hopefully expect to see it there. I don't think it's having the same kind of scheduling hold up that has, you know, got a stranglehold on Uzumaki, which is,
I was about to say, while we're there at Annecy,
can we get some Uzumaki?
Where's Uzumaki, DeMarco? Where is it?
Right?
Where is it, man?
So
it is May of 2024. Where is Uzumaki?
Yes, right. The only one I really want. Like, this isn't for me, and that's fine. And I mean, I hope that it's good and that Lord of the Rings fans enjoy it, because I know that they have, you know, like expectations, and they can be very opinionated and things like that when it comes to their favorite property. So I hope that this, you know, fulfills that. Based on like the research I did before this is likely following the native they were called Rohirrim, but there's a couple different names for them, and they're kind of based on Anglo-Saxons. What studio is doing this? That's a good question.
I just looked for this. It's funny. I just looked this up the other day because I did not know that it was supposed to be an anime. I knew that it was, yeah, there was a new Lord of the Rings movie coming out, and I just mentioned to my family, I'm like, yeah, did you know that there's a new Lord of the Rings movie happening this year in December? And then I looked it up and I saw it directed by Kenji Kameyama. That doesn't, yeah, sound like a normal Hollywood director name.
No, and our encyclopedia has Sola Entertainment as animation Warner production, Brothers. But that's, yeah, not quite right. I think Sola Entertainment is overseeing whomever is animating it, because last I knew, Sola Entertainment was not an animation like studio. Like they're more of a production company, like that oversees production responsibilities, but not the literal animation. And if you go to like their encyclopedia page on A&N Encyclopedia, Sola Entertainment is credited with like the production on Ninja Kamui, but Ninja Kamui wasn't animated there. It was animated at SNE Entertainment, which is Songu Park's studio, right? But they mostly have overseen projects for that are kind of like, for lack of a better, like American co-pros, like the Shinmue animation that was on Adult Swim, Tower of God, which was, I believe Crunchyroll was part of the production committee for that. Rick and Morty, the anime, which, so these are...
Oh yeah, that's a thing that's happening.
Yeah, Lazarus, which isn't out yet, but looks really, really good. Stuff like that. So I don't think Sola Entertainment is truly the animation studio for this project, in which case I don't actually know who's animating it. But as you said, Kenji Kamiyama is the director, which he's kind of like a mixed bag for me, because I associate him a lot with those 3D CG Ghost in the Shell Netflix projects and stuff like that. And then
I liked Blade Runner Black Lotus. Yeah. I thought that was a really good CG production, but I think I might be in the outlier there. I
know that's I'm not sure. It might have like mixed results on that. I mean, it's not like the last thing he did that I liked was the Napping Princess movie, but that was a 2D project. I haven't watched any of his Ultraman stuff that he's done either, but he's done
That's the Netflix anime one.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that. I've watched that show.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
It's I don't know. The production on the show, I think, is fine. My issues with that show more have to do with that it doesn't really do a lot of what I like from Ultraman.
Okay. So
it's a little hard for me to be like completely divorced from my giant tokusatsu biases.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as like the animation and the production value goes, there's some like good action scenes, and it has some good atmosphere and some good some weight to the animation, at least the last season I watched, which I think was season 2.
Okay. Yeah, I think there may have been a recent third season.
I think they did that thing where they split a season in half and called it two different seasons.
Okay. I thought I'd seen a key visual recently with Ultraman, and he's got like some little kaiju sort of buddy in the image or something. But yeah. So back to the war on the Rohirrim. So what I looked up, this would take place before the Lord of the Rings books, like as far as like the timeline goes. The main character is supposed to be Helm Hammerhand, who was the king of Rohan at the time. A lot of the like stuff that you get through reading this initially, I thought that it was kind of like Viking sort of, but again, it's more Anglo-Saxon, like the Saxons. But anyway, it's supposed to follow him, and he's going to be voiced by Brian Cox, which is pretty freaking cool. Yeah, he's good. And then Gaia Wise will be playing Helm's daughter, Hera. And then Luke Pasqualino is Wolf. And Miranda Otto will be returning from the movies to voice her character, Eowyn, Shield Maiden of Rohan. That's confusing to me, because I thought this takes place early enough that she wouldn't still be alive, unless I'm mixing her up with a different
character. Eowyn's an elf, though, right?
Is Eowyn an elf? I don't remember her being an elf in the movies.
Oh, is she not? I thought...
I don't know. Maybe she is. That would
I'm make also not a Lord of the Rings expert. I am. I have seen, I've seen the Peter Jackson films exactly one time each.
Yeah.
20 years ago. Okay, Eowyn's not a... I want to correct myself before anyone hearing this down the line blows a gasket. Eowyn is not an elf. Thank you, chat. She is the niece of the Rohan Rohirrim King.
Okay.
So, I don't know how that works. Okay, although humans live a while, though, in Lord of the Rings world.
Oh, they do.
That is a thing. Yeah, humans live to be pretty old.
Okay, so it's not like standard 75-ish years. It's longer than that.
No, I think they can live to be like 150 or something like that.
Okay.
If I remember. Okay. Again, not an expert, but I seem to recall flipping through the appendices and reading about like Aragorn lived until he was, you know, blah, 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 many years old or something like that.
So. Okay. Nick's pointed out that she's listed as narrating it. Yeah, but that's Eowyn, though. Oh, so maybe she's like reading, but okay. Okay, yeah.
Is it really an animated Lord of the Rings film if we don't have a bunch of freakish looking rotoscoped orcs that have been sloppily pasted onto a psychedelic Ralph Bakshi background? That's what I want to know.
No.
Lindsay, have you seen the animated Lord of the Rings?
Of course I have.
Good.
Same studio that did The Last Unicorn.
Yeah, the movie slaps. It's not good, but it slaps.
I don't think I've seen the Lord of the Rings ones, but I did watch the Hobbit one several times. So
the Hobbit one is different. The Hobbit is, I believe is the Hobbit Rankin? It's not Rankin Bass, but it's by it was published by Rankin Bass. Mm-hmm. And that one was done, I actually believe that was done by a Japanese studio.
Okay.
And it was made kind of, it's this weird foldable human. Dan Olson has a great video that kind of runs down the history of the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings. And it's this kind of strange co-production sort of situation where one studio had the rights to the Hobbit and they just so happened to be like making it around the same time. And so they were sort of paired together, even though they had nothing really to do with each other.
Oh, okay.
So it's Rankin Bass and Topcraft.
Topcraft. Okay. Yeah.
Who made Nausicaa.
Yes.
And that is mostly what they are known for is Nausicaa.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh man. Now I want to rewatch those. But we don't have time right now for me to start watching Rankin Bass because we have to talk about anime this week. I thought we could talk about Yatagarasu first.
Let's do it.
All right. So, one, I was disappointed because there was not a princely interaction between Wakamiya and the girls who have been waiting for him to show up for like more than 6 months. I think
at this point, it's actually kind of funny. That once again, during the biggest like courtship holiday of the season, the minute before he arrives, he gets diverted by more politicking, and all the girls are sitting there in their fancy kimonos, waiting for him to like pick the prettiest one
and put it on.
And he's just like, nope, sorry, bye.
Bye. Yeah. So we find out a couple things in this episode. One, allegedly the prince has been sending them letters consistently and those letters are getting diverted and we don't know by who or how at this point, but that's why they have received zero word from the prince up until now. I thought he had literally been, it's like he's left these girls on read for 6 months. Like they're sending him messages and they know he's reading them and not responding or showing up or anything. Right. But supposedly he's been sending them letters and they aren't getting here and we don't know why.
Especially because he's not that far away.
He's not that far away. He was snooping just a couple episodes ago on them.
I feel like you could probably like hand the letters off and they would get there.
You could make Yukiya deliver the letters and they would get there.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, so that's supposedly happening. We also know, at least when it comes to stuff. Well, actually, there's more that we don't know, I feel like, from this episode than we do, because there was a strange discussion between Wakamiya and his brother's aide. His brother's aide shows up and is basically like, listen, I don't like some of the dudes that are hanging around Prince Nausicaa anymore. They're kind of giving me bad vibes. They're like too radical. So I'm going to support you, Wakamiya, to ascend the throne as long as you promise basically not to do anything too harsh to your brother because I truly care for him. Right? So that conversation happens. Then, okay. Although I don't trust anyone in this show, right? I don't trust anyone. I don't trust Asebi. I don't trust Natsuka's aide. I don't trust anybody.
Do you trust Yukiya? I feel like we can
trust Yukiya. I trust Yukiya.
He's a good little scamp.
Until they give me reason not to. But this is Asafusa. So the prince says, all right, well, I'm going to give you a test to kind of prove this. We don't know what that test was. And I'm
they hint that it has to do with like arranging this
meeting.
This meeting with his brother and the other guy from the north.
I didn't catch that, so I can't confirm for sure. But basically, Nazca's meeting with this other lord, presumably one who's got a stake in either who becomes emperor or in the stuff going on with the princesses. And he kind of just like, he's kind of just mouthing off quite a lot to Nazca at the time about how the prince Wakamiya insisted on meeting with him. And he slips that Atsufusa tells him, oh, well, just send him an invite, but send it on the same day as this upcoming festival where he's supposed to meet the girls. And he just, you know, won't show up because he has other arrangements and that'll get you out of this. And of course, Wakamiya being the way that he is, as soon as he gets that invitation when he's supposed to have already be gone, he turns around and goes back. We don't really know why. I'm thinking that, like, Atsufusa probably told the lord that because Wakamiya wanted him to. That's what I'm thinking.
It was to kind of trap the three of them into a meeting where like there wouldn't be an easy way to get out of it because he was invited, but because the guy thought he wouldn't come, I guess he picked that day to also scheme with his brother. I have to admit, I thought this was a good episode.
Yeah.
But I think we are slowly approaching my personal critical mass for being able to follow all of like the social, political, like microaggression fueled backstabs.
Yeah.
Because we have like you just said, we're having to do a lot of like inference and guessing about why characters would maybe make these choices versus these choices. Yeah. And as we see with Asabi's half of the story, a lot of it is due to petty bullshit, but it's very mannered and structured and ritualistic petty bullshit. So you can't just be petty regular style. You can't just drop a few diss tracks in a weekend and call it good. You have to like put on the right outfit. You have to like, you know, turn in three semicircles and raise your left hand and sing the right song. And then you have to, you know, to me, it's starting to get a little confusing on an emotional level, if that makes sense. And I think that's where we're supposed to be. Like, that's kind of the point of the court intrigue is that no one can be trusted. And everyone's talking about out both sides of their beak. But
But there's also like, what are the stakes for some of these like microaggressions too? Like, and I remember feeling this way about some of the stuff that happens in like early Rose of Versailles between Marie Antoinette and like some of the court ladies, where like there was a whole like episode around a Marie Antoinette not like properly greeting a woman when she ran into her at court, and that causing like a huge issue.
And I remember exactly what I'm talking about.
That's exactly kind of what's going on here. It's the same sort of thing, but you reflect back on it and you're like, this is some petty, stupid shit, y'all.
Like when Asabi gets yelled at for having that little sash because it was from that other girl. And like,
she was going to hang up a kimono that had like a beautiful fabric. And they're like, you can't hang this up because it was a gift from someone else. So it's like you're displaying something positive about one of the other princesses when the prince is going to come to visit, and it'll reflect more like attention onto this other princess because she was so kind to give it to you, or it's so, you know, yada yada.
Yeah, she's just like crying. She's like, what the hell?
Someone was nice to me and I just wanted to show it off. Yeah. So in the meantime, the prince doesn't show up. Everyone's real mad about it, sort of like understandably. But then we do get, and this is what keeps me hooked for the next episode, because like, all right, the prince isn't showing up, the thing with the letters, you know, whatever. But at the very end, we have Hamayu, who's been like my low-key favorite the whole time. She's the lady who just fishes in the pond and drinks and kind of isn't up for any bullshit and like low-key gives me I'm just marrying this guy for political reasons and actually I like women vibes like the whole time. Oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah, Yeah.
Or she's like gonna assassinate someone because she's really in love with the prince's sister or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that, right? So she's just fishing, drinking sake, and then Shiratama, who's she's gotten, I feel like, the least amount of attention among the four girls. Like, you know, they're all kind of easy to designate. You're like, okay, Asebi's the one who cries at the drop of a hat, and she's kind of this country bumpkin or whatever, but she's friends with Wakamiya's sister, the princess. And then you have, her name is Masuho no Suzuki, who's the one who's, you know, red, and she's a little more ostentatious, and she puts on airs of being polite to kind of like jab at you through backhanded compliments and stuff like that. And then Hamayu is, you know, like the chill one who's drunk all the time. And then you have Shiratama, who's just sort of like,
I forgot who she was. Like when she showed up, I was like, crap, do I know you? Like, am I supposed to wreck? And I went back and I went, oh, okay. But you're right.
Yeah, the only really big moment she's had up to this point is like when Asabi was being picked on, she dropped her cup and broke it intentionally. That was Shiratama that did that during like the first or second episode. But she otherwise hasn't really done
she's
much.
She's from the north, right? Because
I'm really bad about which one goes to which cardinal direction.
Because I think Hamayu is from the south.
Okay.
Or it's either that or the opposite, because she said, hey, no, it is, because she told Hamayu, we want the south to pull out of the race.
Okay.
And if you do, the north promises that we'll treat you nice as soon as I'm the consort. And Hamayu gives her that cold-ass look, which is one of the best.
And she's like, she's like, sure, as soon as you can put it in writing, which she won't be able to do until she's actually picked, probably. Yeah. So she's basically saying, like, I'm not pulling out until you're actually selected. And Shiratama's, I think you're right about her being from the north, because she's from the same area as Yukiya.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And then Asabi's from the east, because she talks about they're the ones that play the koto.
Yeah. And they're like skilled musicians is kind of their reputation as far as like what they have to offer. So that would leave
Pretty Gal from the west.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Yeah. I always associate her with south because she wears red, and I think of that as being like a hot, like warm color. And so that goofs me up.
Now, Lindsay, I'm about to ask a really dumb question, but
okay.
I need it to be answered because I'm a big dum-dum and it's just been bothering me.
Okay.
Is everyone in this show birds? Like everyone?
Yeah.
Like, is Asabi a bird?
Yeah.
Okay. So when she freaked out about Yukiya getting his ass beat by those guards a few weeks back, it wasn't because she'd never seen the bird people in their bird forms before.
No, it's because he transformed in front of her. And she'd never seen anyone transform before, because that was just uncouth.
So that was like, that was giving me, that one scene made me question, like, wait a minute, is she not a bird? Is the whole thing that she's like she's the one human gal surrounded by crazy bird people?
Can you imagine if one of them is, though? Because we ended this episode and Shiratama told Hamayu, she's like, I know what your secret is. And if you don't pull out, I'm going to tell everybody. What is it, James?
Is she not a bird?
I'm like, it would be funny if there were, but I was also thinking, like, what if she's actually a dude?
That's what I thought, actually. That was my... just because the androgynous, I don't know, if, you know, cross-dressing or you know, gender fluid, noble. That's such a trope in this kind of court drama.
Right.
And it'd be cool that'd be a cool twist. I'd like that.
Yeah.
So Asabi is a bird. Okay.
Asabi is a bird. And ever since we learned that, all of the giant crow mounts are also people who can't transform back, it just makes
that made that scene where Yukiya was riding him. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, he was like riding him, or like, you know, he's just standing there like holding the bird. It's got like a bridle on and everything. I'm like, that is a person.
Yeah, he understands what you say.
Yeah.
He could turn into a guy or a gal if he just took the thing off his leg. It's such an interesting world.
I just realized you sent this picture as well, James. Great summary for Yatagarasi right now, for those of us
who... it's just a screen cap from the episode, right? It's just
one this of guy was in the episode.
Yeah, it's Bird Person.
It's that's his name too. This is, for those who are just listening, this is a image of Bird Person from Rick and Morty with the caption, "It has been a challenging mating season for Bird Person."
That is, I mean, it was a quote,
right? It is directly from the show. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't...
not for the prince, though. He's been mating left and right.
So yeah, he's, just he's, not with any of the royal ladies. Just with...
We also forgot to mention, I guess, the big reveal, or not reveal, but hint of this episode, is that Asabi's mom has, like, a sketchy, secret, spooky past connection the court.
Asabi's mom may have boinked the current emperor at one point in her bid to become the empress, but she ultimately wasn't chosen, right? That was kind of what it was.
Yeah. Is she the prince's half-sister? Is it going to be one of those?
Oh, like Asabi is the prince's... Oh, no.
They start the episode with that whole, like, so you wish that you could be real sisters with her. And then she doesn't really say anything.
But that could be foreshadowing, James.
I don't know, man.
I mean,
wait a minute.
Natsuka could be like setting it up to like prop him up to pick her. Yeah. And then like, then the entire like union would be invalidated once it's discovered what her true secret is. And then
should do the thing where they wait until after they like have a baby. And then it's like, surprise, yo. It was your sister, man.
No, James.
Yeah, that's some real... Yeah, that's
like
that's
some old boy shit. Come on.
Yes. No. Oh, my God. Yes.
That guy comes out
just like in his suit in front of the prince. The prince has to cut off his tongue with a pair of scissors. And it's like, I bet you wondered why I kept you holed up in that brothel all those years. Well, it turns out that I was playing you all along, sucker.
Oh, my God. You're way too enthusiastic.
You're the one that brought up old boy. If you're gonna,
this is me looking at you right now. Okay.
I ended my review of freaking Go-Go Loser Ranger this week by saying anime has warped my brain so much that I don't even know what level of incest is normal in media anymore.
I think none is normal because given what I remember the reaction.
Because the number of shows we watch with incest is definitely more than that the baseline.
Remember how like normal people reacted to Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all of us were like, okay, sure, but at least it's not Usagi Drop.
Yeah.
I know that's not incest, but you know, same.
Yeah.
Same taboos being circled around here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll just have to find out if we've predicted the twist of Yatagarasu or not as time goes on. If you're correct, I don't know, eat a bunch of shrimp.
I was going to say, you'll give me a button that says incest birds, and I just got to wear that.
I'll commission it. We'll sell them at AX at our booth. No one will know why. And like, it was cheaper to get 50 of these made than just one, so now we've got extra incest bird pins.
It should be like little anthro versions, bird or bird throw, avia throw, whatever. You know what I mean? Bird versions of the characters from, was it Oregairu or My Little Sister Can't Be This Cute?
Yeah. Or,
what was that one? You know the one.
That's
of them getting married.
Oh, Oremo.
Oremo. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with bird, with like bird faces.
With bird faces. Someone quick, get the bridal picture of the kids from Oremo and just put some bird heads on them. We need it for the content. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving, backing away slowly from that conversation into Kaiju number 8. This was a cute episode.
Yeah, it was fun. Bonding, lots of bromances going around.
Yeah, there are a lot of bromances going on there. I have noticed, have we gotten anything resembling girl fan service in this show up to this point, because I don't think we have, but we have gotten a lot of dude bod.
Yeah, and dude, like, just barely toweled crotch. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Cox has been very close to
exposing himself. Yeah. Appreciate the dad bod representation as well. Like, yes. As far as like Kafka goes, I mean, he was just sucking it all in, and then it's like, okay, actually.
I mean, they were shaming him for it, which I did not.
They were, because they were
at
like
the same time, he kind of brought it on himself. He was trying he was trying to compete with the buff boys. I think the closest thing we've got to fan service is there was like one shot of oh my gosh, I'm forgetting her name. Kikoru. There was one shot of Kikoru checking out homegirls, Mina's thighs.
And oh, yeah, like, but you know, she just wanted to know how she her workout routine.
Oh, yeah, right? Sure, she did. Yeah,
she just wanted her workout routine. Yeah, and then,
how'd you get them glutes, girl? Like, how'd you,
right? But like, what was funny about it, too, is she's like, well, come over here and I'll show you. And I'm like, okay, well, here's the, and then they just cut away and we don't see any of it.
It's true. I noticed that, too. I was like, oh, I thought it was weird. You know, even if it had just been like calisthenics or whatever, you'd think that would be like a, you know, a nice little opportunity, because Mina, I think, is the least developed of the main.
She's probably had like five lines. Yeah.
She had one smile this episode, which granted, a fun and cute smile, very well timed, but still. And so I thought, oh, it might be cute if, or if she like, you know, maybe like, not like jealous in a romantic sense, but we're like, so, you know, since when are you close to Kafka? Like, I noticed that you guys are talking over there. What do you know? What do you know about him? Why is he suddenly, just as soon as this crazy, freaky humanoid kaiju appears, so invested in joining up with the team? And then Kikoru would have to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you even mean? I don't know.
I like this dude, by the way. The vice captain. His name's I'm gonna call him Hoshina, that's his last name in here. Like, he just kind of seemed like, you know, he's got a bowl cut, which is, you know, a choice in this time. But I mean,
there's always one.
Sure, I like one. Most of the time he has these like little fangs that hang out. I guess it's kind of got cat-like qualities or maybe fox-like qualities to his design that I like. But I'm also low-key kind of scared of him.
The interaction at the end of the episode I was surprised by.
Yeah.
Because we knew that he like is suspicious of Kafka because he saw the readings in the suit and was like, what is up with this guy? Like, there's something weird with him.
Yeah.
And so he's keeping him around to figure that out. But then there was that whole like that little interaction at the end where he was like, you better not be thinking you're going to take my spot.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if he was like putting on, you know, like if he was just putting on like a show to intimidate Kafka, or if he really means that.
Yeah. I don't know if he's putting on a show to intimidate him. If he's got like a low key obsessive crush on Mina maybe, or if he's like really proud of his position and just doesn't want to give it up or what. But I mean, the way he phrased it was made it sound like he's very interested in staying next to Mina specifically though.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's a little suspicious. I feel like if he finds out Kafka's kaiju form at this point, he would just straight up kill him. So yeah.
Or dissect him for
or dissect him or something. Yeah.
Turn him inside out. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy was new and he's immediately my favorite, even though he may be like do you think he's like the Bakugo of the group? I don't think he's quite.
No, he's not that much of a dick. He's more of the he's more of the what's his name? Friend from Persona 5. He's that guy.
Oh, okay. He's I can one. Picture that guy.
Also, I'm usually the last person to pick up on the good male ships.
Yeah.
But he was given Keno. Is it Keno?
Keno. Kafka?
Reno.
Reno Ichikawa. Yeah, the white-haired guy. Yeah, it's like he made
there were some sparks.
Yeah, it's like he made up a rivalry that Reno was not even like interested in necessarily. He's like, why am I competing with you?
Maybe the screenshot right after that. I think I specifically was like, this is where the fan art started.
Yeah, this is it.
That's the one.
We're telling you, like, it's right there. He's
there,
like,
is no heterosexual explanation for looking at a person like that.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of looks like a dinosaur, which I mean is neither positive or a negative, I think. But I'm just saying, like, the space required to go from here to, like, chomping on his neck is so slight.
Minimal.
It could happen any moment. So, yeah, Quanti 5 says they're subtext boyfriends.
Oh, yeah. I clocked that instantaneously. And I'm really bad at that. So it must be, like, off the charts obvious.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's also two other guys that I would consider subtext boyfriends in here. We don't have, like, kind of a shot just of them, so I'll just go ahead and go with this one and hope it doesn't get us kicked off of YouTube. But
tiny towels.
Yeah. On the far left, this is the buffest guy of the group, and he's actively competing. His name's Kaguragi, and he's actively competing with Izumo, who's got, like, the long green hair on the right of Kafka.
Yeah.
Well, our right. Kafka's left, but you get what I'm saying. Like, they're competing against each other the whole time, and the camera really likes to hang out on Kaguragi's, like, physique to the point where, it's like, who's this for? Whom? So
it's for the cool kids is who it's for.
Yeah, it's for the cool kids. But yeah, most of this episode was a lot of goofing around in the bathtub, as friends do. Right. And just kind of like training kind of status quo sort of stuff. And
building
a team, kind of letting us get to know, you know, their dynamic and everything. That scene was kind of funny too.
It was really cool. I honestly really like her. I think she's great.
Yeah. Kikoru is like the perfect balance, right? Of like, she's not too soon. In the tsundere, right? So she's not like,
she's not overly an aggro. Like, she doesn't genuinely like hate everyone around her.
Yeah.
She actually really wants to make friends and be nice. She just also knows that she's exceptionally better at everything compared to everyone around her.
Right.
It's giving her a little bit of a
debate. That's fair. James, I'm looking through these pictures and I realize we don't have a Buccio this week. The audience is disappointed that you slip in a Buccio.
I had to find at least a bird person. I was gonna slip in. It was a cute screenshot. Buccio got his driver's license.
Oh wow!
But the context around it, there would have been a lot to explain. The episode of Tonara no Yokai-san this week was much more focused on the Bakagitsune, Yuri, the fox, and her like familial issues, and so there wasn't a lot of great Buccio content this week, but that's okay. It's okay.
Do you have time to explain the terrifying tanuki in your screenshot, though?
Oh yeah. So yeah, the show loves to do these little kind of one-off inserts that may or may not kind of be hinting at future developments, but the little school kids, we have like the kappa and the one of them is a little cyclops, and they know I keep forgetting the term. What's the term for when an inanimate object comes to life after like so many years of being?
God, there was a whole series about renting those.
It's, I don't even know if this is the same concept as the gay car, but it's similar where they have like that biological anatomy model. It's it's like a plastic guy and he's like half just like
skeleton, kind of like, half muscles or something like that.
But so they're hanging out in the school and they're talking about how there's a stuffed tanuki who has a ghost that like wanders around the school at night, and of course the kids are all getting scared. And so they're telling stories about the spooky tanuki ghost, and that's where that screenshot came from.
Oh, okay.
Tsukumogami, thank you.
Tsukumogami, thank you, Andrew McGee and Nick. LFR has an important question. What kind of vehicle can a cat drive?
You know, they have not, they asked him what kind of car he wants to drive, and the jury is out, but it is confirmed they do have adorable, tiny little, like, Zootopia cars for the little spirits.
Okay, okay.
Although he could also transform into just a human shape, so if he wanted
to
drive whatever car he wanted, I guess.
But okay.
They better give him a cute little cat-sized car, that's all I'm saying.
Keep a little catnip on the dashboard. Or,
Oh, yeah. Like a little hula girl, but it's like a cat.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Nick, I'm not honoring that comment by reading
it. That's a good comment, Nick. I want you to know that I respect it and I recognize it. And that was a once in a lifetime get, and you got it. And that's good.
It's an Austin Powers reference, isn't it?
No, that's Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. Okay. Yeah.
Kill Bill.
Got it.
And
so, Buck, those of you who've seen the movie.
That's basically Buccio. Come on. That's so good. Ah. That's so good.
All right. I'll let you guys have that one then.
Yes.
That about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with maybe some more Delicious in Dungeon to talk about. The most recent episode was really good, but it was mostly about Marcille's like latent fear of death. Well, not her own death, but everyone dying around her because she's an elf and guilt and stuff. And, you know, like working through trauma, it was pretty good, but there was not a lot of eating. So
if the Freerun crossover potential is it's right there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Anyway, this once again, a reminder to drop your favorite dojins in the comments, and we will see you here next week, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. So until then, bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. But how do you feel? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? Get to GNC. We'll help with solutions to address those side effects and keep you going on your journey. GNC.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream. Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies, to make four decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
She said, get out the chat room and clean mine.
Glad stretch, feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.